There was a successful and prominent CEO who was traveling along with his wife in the car. And as they were going along the road, they needed to stop for gas. So they stopped at a gas station. And while they were there, she was out near the car. He went inside to get something. And as he was checking out at the register, he looked across through the window. Are we on? We're on. Okay. As he looked out the window, he saw his wife talking to one of the gas station attendants. And they were having this very animated conversation, and they were laughing and smiling. And eventually, she reached over and hugged the man, and he walked away. Well, the husband walked out of the gas station and went to his wife and said, "What in the world is going on? Who is that?" And she says, "That is a guy I dated in college. In fact, we were engaged for a while, but ultimately we broke off the relationship." And he thought for a second and then said, "Well, that was probably a pretty good idea, because if you'd have married him, you'd have been married to a gas station attendant, but because you married me, you married the CEO." And she says, "No, honey. If I would have married him, he would have been the CEO." Well, it goes without saying that women have a great deal of influence upon our world. As mothers, as wives, as teachers, as authors, as politicians, as CEOs, as doctors and astronauts, architects and scientists, as social workers and judges and veterinarians, and the list goes on and on. But what if a woman is none of those? What if she's alone and hungry? What if she's behind enemy lines with no family, no future, and no hope? It's not to say that she didn't ever have anything, but she was living in an immoral society, in a starving family. With a move from home, she soon became a widow, and after a passing decade, she had no children because of her two boys who died. You see, three funerals in a family of four can leave anyone destitute, lost, and in this case, even bitter. While many of us identify with the hardships of Job, few Bible scholars focus on this woman. In fact, though she is the main part of the story, the small book that she's in is not even named after her. Maybe she misses out on the limelight because people are confused with her. They don't really understand why she says some of the things she does. Maybe they're even uncomfortable with her words and her actions. The truth is, if this woman had a theme song, it might be this one right here.
Cheated, been mistreated. When will I be loved? I've been pushed down, I've been pushed round. When will I be loved?
You recognize that song? Originally written by Linda Ronstadt years and years ago, back in 1960. It was written and performed by the Everly Brothers. But when Linda Ronstadt did a cover for it in 1975, that's when it really got famous. And there's a lot of reasons why that song was catchy. Maybe because Linda Ronstadt can sing it like no one else can. But I think it really caught on because a lot of people, that could be their theme song. When will I be loved? This certainly would have been the song of Naomi. The life sentence we'll be looking at today involves this woman who had so little left in her life. Tucked away in the story of Ruth, the beginning, middle, and end of the book are really all about Naomi. So what do we do with her? And where do we even begin? I think the best place to begin is in Ruth chapter 1. So if you have your Bibles, you can read along with me or just listen as I read the first five verses of Ruth chapter 1. It says, in the days when the judges ruled, I want to pause for just a second. If you turn back one page, you're no longer in Ruth, you're in Judges. And you read the last verse of Judges chapter 21. It says, in those days, Israel had no king. Everyone did as he saw fit. This is the time period in which Ruth is living. It's in the time of Judges. Society has continued to go down. In fact, if you read the end of Judges chapter 21, there's this really interesting story in which we kind of get the musical Seven Bride for Seven Brothers, how the Benjamites go in and they steal away these women. It's a crazy Wild West type of atmosphere. And this is the time that Ruth is living. But it's not just that the society was struggling. It also turns out that in the second part of verse 1, there was a famine in the land. And a man from Bethlehem in Judah, together with his wife and two sons, went to live for a while in the country of Moab. Pause for a second. Moab, good or bad? Bad. In fact, under the rule of King Eglon for the last 18 years, they had basically been wearing down on Israel. And yet this is where Elimelech and his wife end up going. The man's name was Elimelech. Verse 2, his wife's name was Naomi. The names of the two sons were Mahlon and Chilion. They were Ephrathites from Bethlehem in Judah. And they went to Moab and lived there. Now Elimelech, Naomi's husband, died. And she was left with her two sons. They married Moabite women, one named Orpah and the other named Ruth. They had lived there about 10 years. Both Mahlon and Chilion also died, and Naomi was left without her two sons and her husband. What is going on in Ruth's life? She has a mother-in-law who is now in some ways destitute. And while the story seems to be about Ruth, it's named after Ruth, it seems like, bless you, Naomi is the one who's having issues. She's the one who the story is really all about. Ruth had nothing. She had no husband, no children, and no promise of any more of them. And so she decides that she's going to go home. What else is left for her? By the way, Naomi, her name means what? Pleasant. But we're going to see in just a moment that she doesn't even want to keep her name. Oddly enough, her boys, Mahlon and Chilion, which are both now dead, their names meant sickly and failing. What kind of names are those? It was like from the very beginning she understood. But we don't look at her like we look at Job, and maybe because she doesn't have that same fortitude that Job had. But I think there's a lot that we can learn from this woman named Naomi. Later on in this series of life sentences, we're going to take a look at Ruth. So I'm going to skip over, we're going to leapfrog over Ruth's part for the most part. But there is something I do want to point out. We know the famous statement that Ruth makes that says, I'm not going to leave you. Where you will go, I will go. Your people will be my people, and your God will be my God. But I want to point this out. While we say that saying says so much about Ruth, I also have to believe that it says something about Naomi as well. That there was something about her that when Ruth saw her, Ruth said, I will not leave you. And the God that you serve is my God. And the country that you live is my country. I'm going to stay with you. And so while we tend to prop up Ruth for making that statement, I think it's fair to acknowledge that there was something about Naomi that caused Ruth to want to stay with her. But let's go ahead and pick up in the latter part of chapter 1, starting in verse 19. It says, so the two women went on until they came to Bethlehem. When they arrived in Bethlehem, the whole town was stirred because of them. And the women exclaimed, can this be Naomi? Now, why would they ask that question? Could this be Naomi? Surely it has to be her, but maybe it's not. Maybe it's not, because where's her husband, Elimelech? Where's her two boys that we saw years ago? Where's the pleasant that was once there? All we have is this woman who has aged far more than the 10 years since she had left. And she looks at them and she says, don't call me pleasant. Don't call me Naomi. She said, call me Mara, because the Almighty has made my life very bitter. I went away full, but the Lord has brought me back empty. Why call me Naomi? The Lord has afflicted me. The Almighty has brought misfortune upon me. So what do we make of this? This is not the great story of Job. Job is sitting there in the ash heap. He has all these questions, and his friends are there saying, it's all your fault. His wife slings open the door and says, hey, Job, curse God and die. But here we have Naomi. She says, I'm bitter. And God did this to me. My life was full, and He's made it empty. Does she have the right to make that statement? How do we wrestle with the tension of the bitterness that this woman feels? Should this story even be in the Bible? And how dare she blame God for all of this? We're called to be people of joy. But what happens when we can't find any? There's one thing I want us to notice. Actually, two. The first is this. She doesn't deny the existence of God. Because that's what a lot of us say. A lot of us say when things go bad, they say, there can't be a God because God wouldn't allow this to happen to me. Not only does she not deny the existence of God, she believes that her sorrows has proven it. There is a God, and He did this to me. She believes that God is alive and working, albeit not in her favor. The second thing that she doesn't do is she doesn't curse God. She just acknowledges that He's in control. I think Ruth could have been a lot shorter book, because we could have left out the first, which Naomi is in, and the end, which Naomi is in, and even in the middle where she's always kind of working behind the scenes, and Ruth could have been real tiny. But I think God wanted the story of Naomi in here because He wants you to know that God is big enough to handle your problems and your laments and your questions and complaints. That God is not scared when life doesn't go the way you want it to go. Because the truth is, for almost all of us, life is not really going the way we want it to go. Because everyone in here is 5 years older than you were back in 2015. Now, for some of you young guys, that's good. You know, 5 years older, that's great. When I was a kid, I celebrated birthdays. I couldn't wait to get candle number 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 on my cake. That was awesome. Now, I don't want a birthday. I don't want a cake. I don't want to get the fire extinguisher out. I'm coming up on 45. That's a lot of candles. You can't get all those candles in one box anymore. I have to get a candle that is a 4 and a 5 because otherwise there's too much smoke in the room. I don't like that. And for most of us, I mean, Rusty is back there somewhere. We won't count how many candles he would need. We're older now. We're slower now. Technology befuddles us. We figured out the copier and the fax machine. Now we have smartphones that ding and ring and go off and we don't know what's going on. And children are getting older. And classmates are dying. And we're dealing with words like cancer and hospice. It's not getting any better. What do we do? Can we dare talk to God about our hurts and our sorrows? Can we come to Him and say, God, this can't be right. Can God handle this situation? What does Naomi do about all of this? Well, chapter 2 is mainly about Ruth and a guy named Boaz. But again, within that chapter, we see glimpses of Naomi in the background. She's still a widow. And she still has no kids. But we see her working. But here's what's really interesting. She's not working for the benefit of Naomi. She's working for the benefit of an ex-daughter-in-law. You get that? There is no relation. Ruth owes Naomi nothing. Naomi owes Ruth nothing. At one time, Ruth was married to Naomi's son. Naomi's son is dead. And Naomi said, go back to your mother and start your family all over again. And Ruth says, no, I'm going to stay with you. She says, are you crazy? Look how old I am. If I get married today and I have kids in 9 months, are you going to wait till my boys are old enough so you can marry them? No. But Ruth persists. And there they are back in her hometown. And Naomi is able to do something that every psychologist and counselor and friend should urge their friends to do when they're hurting. Get out of yourself. And that's exactly what Naomi does. She starts working, but it's not for her benefit. It's for her ex-daughter-in-law. So who is Boaz? Well, as we read in the text, he's the kinsman redeemer. So what is a kinsman redeemer? A kinsman redeemer is a near relative who can go to a widow of the family member, and on behalf of the deceased man, he can reclaim or redeem the land that had belonged to that family and then marry the widow so that she is no longer lost and destitute. So, Elimelech has a relative in whom can be the kinsman redeemer for Naomi, so that Naomi's life is not over. But you know the story. Is Boaz redeeming Naomi? Is his promise to marry her? No. Naomi steps back and brings forth this girl who really is no relation to her. It was her daughter-in-law, and now not really a daughter-in-law at all. Naomi has no family, but there's never a mention within the book of Ruth that Naomi is doing this for the benefit of Ruth. We just see it inferred that here it is. Naomi doesn't benefit. Not in bloodline. And yet here she is working within that relationship. Naomi is the one who should have been redeemed, but instead she steps back so Ruth can take over. I want to read just one verse, the first verse of Ruth chapter 3, verse 1. It says this, "One day Naomi, her mother-in-law, said to her, 'My daughter, should I not try to find a home for you where you will be well provided for?'" Naomi stops thinking about herself and her sorrow, and she begins to focus on her sort of daughter-in-law. And as a result of that, you know the story. Boaz is going to take a liking to Ruth, and ultimately, he's going to marry her. And that could mean that Naomi's out of the picture. But listen to this. I love how this ends. In Ruth chapter 4, verse 13, it says, "So Boaz took Ruth, and she became his wife. Then he went to her, and the Lord enabled her to conceive, and she gave birth to a son. The women said to Naomi, 'Praise be to the Lord, who this day has not left you without a kinsman redeemer. May he become famous throughout Israel. He will renew your life and sustain you in your old age. For your daughter-in-law, who loves you and who is better than seven sons, has given birth to a child.' Then Naomi took the child, laid him in her lap, and cared for him. The women living there said, 'Naomi has a son.'" Naomi has a son. Not Naomi's ex-daughter-in-law has a son. Not the one that used to be married to her son has a son, but Naomi has a son. And they named him Obed. You get that? Did you catch that right there? And they named him Obed. Isn't that a great name? Did you just ask who Obed was? What does it mean? Well, I don't know what Obed means. I mean, that's what I say late at night when I'm really tired. Oh, bed! Or I yell to my kids, go to bed! I don't know what Obed means, but I know what Obed does. Obed is going to have a wife, and he's going to have a child, and they're going to name that child Jesse. I don't know what Jesse means either, But I do know that Jesse is going to have a wife, and she's going to have a child, lots of children, and the youngest one is going to be named David. This is the most amazing story that gets tucked away. Naomi, as a widow and a woman without her two boys, who is bitter, who is alone, who's far away from home. She doesn't know what to do. She can't find joy, but she just does what she can. That's all she can do. And as a result, God weaves her into this amazing story of a kinsman redeemer in the Old Testament and the redeemer for all of us in the New Testament and beyond. Because she just did what she could. Because she looked out for someone else. We now have this legacy of Obed to Jesse to David to Jesus. Because a woman just did what she could. And so this morning, as we look at the life sentence of Naomi, what would be her epitaph would be, "Did her part." It's a little uncomfortable. In fact, we're going to look in class about some of the things that she says and some of the things that make it really seem icky. Like, what do we do with this? Like, how do we wrestle with some of the things that she says? But I just want you to know this. Even in your hurt and your pain and your sorrow, if you're a 7 or 8-year-old on the front or you're a widow in the back, I want you to know that God calls you to be faithful and to do your part. How many lives have been changed? Because people who could have said, "Call me bitter," instead look to bless others. So for each one of us, I don't know what that little part is, but I pray that you will seek to find it. For people in this community that are broken and hurting, it can be those little things that make a big difference. Our words and our actions, they count. Let them count for God. May we be people who can be tucked away in a small story, and yet within our lives have a story of a Redeemer weaved through it. Let us begin this week to do our part, to follow Naomi's model and serve Jesus even through our sorrow. I want to encourage you to do that this morning as we stand and sing.